Good evening. Thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Nick Blumberg. President Donald Trump and his administration take aim at local schools and students.
A student visa is like me inviting you into my home. If you come into my home and put all kinds of crap on my couch, I'm going to kick you out of my house.
International students from schools including Northwestern, the University of Chicago, and the University of Illinois have their visas revoked with little explanation.
If you lack integrity, get out. Get out now, because you will be found out.
Illinois Senate President Don Harmon's own integrity faces questions, with state elections officials saying he took in far larger campaign contributions than legally allowed.
The concept, the idea is a good one, but my God, the devil is in the detail.
Alder people push back on the mayor's affordable housing plan and on a settlement for a man fatally shot by Chicago police.
It's a wrap, Bulls Nation. You can drive home safely. Beep, beep.
The Bulls steer their way toward the postseason, and Northwestern settles with former football players in a bombshell hazing lawsuit. And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are Ray Long from the Chicago Tribune, Rufus Williams from WVON, Zareen Syed, also from the Chicago Tribune, and Maggie Hendricks from Yahoo Sports. Lots to talk about. Let's get right to it. Thank you all for being here. You know, Zareen, as we just mentioned, Trump administration revoking student visas from students here in Illinois. What, if anything, have students and schools been told?
I think that they've been told very little, to be completely honest, and a lot of schools didn't even know that their students had visas revoked until they looked in the Student and Visitor Exchange Program, which is the CVIS, which is monitored by the Department of Homeland Security, and it uses it to track student visas and monitor their records. And so in those checks is when they realized that, you know, several students had just lost their visas. So I think that students were maybe finding out a little bit before the administrations found out, but just very little has been shared with them.
And, you know, you have to imagine this is stoking, you know, some anxiety on campus among students and, you know, confusion for administrators if, as you say, they're not really getting much notification.
Absolutely. I think that one thing that I've gathered is that they're just very scared. I spoke to a professor at UIC who has a lot of advisees that are international students, and she was saying that even her most apolitical students that have never posted about anything politically or even attended a protest are also just scared because they feel that no one is safe right now.
Yeah, because that's a lot of what we've heard from the administration,
yeah,
that they're saying this is about, you know, campus protests or activism, but it sounds like that's not the case for all these folks.
Right, and I think that that's also a little bit unclear. It seems that, and the Department of Homeland Security just recently unveiled that they've created this new task force to monitor the social media accounts of 1.5 million international students that are studying here in the U.S. and finding potential grounds to revoke their visa. So it's not exactly sure if these students in Chicago had anything to do with those checks on social media, but, you know, we'll find out more.
It seems that all the rules and logic have been broken here, and so you can't feel comfortable in any place. And these are students. We get close to the end of the year. They're still there for their studies. This has been a hub for international studies from students all over the world. And knowing what to do in these cases, it just really makes everybody unsettled in this process.
Well, what's the fairness in all this? There is no fairness.
No process.
There's nothing that
really.
Yeah. You might get an email, and then all of a sudden you're thinking it's a joke, and then it's real. And this is not what we believe in as a country. And this is really upsetting everything in the whole system.
Well, and to Rufus's point, I mean, there are so many, you know, local universities that have large international populations. Could these sorts of visa revocations, you know, be depressing, you know, enrollment?
That's a great question. And I think that it's important to note that international students bring in a lot of money to these institutions, and they rely, and universities rely heavily on them. But I think one thing that we've been unpacking with legal experts and law professors in our reporting is that the Trump administration did promise mass deportations, and they've been going after undocumented immigrants, harder to find because they don't have documents, but students are very easy to find and identify and locate because the Homeland Security has multiple pathways to track them. And so going after student visas in higher education institutions is a win-win, is what a lot of experts are saying for the Trump administration, because they're disrupting higher education institutions and also maybe crossing off names on their deportation lists.
But it's just a checklist. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's, disruption seems to be the watchword for this administration. And, you know, to your earlier question, if you're anyone anywhere who is thinking about coming into the United States to study, you wouldn't do so.
Right.
And it's not, I mean, we have wonderful institutions, but there's some wonderful institutions in other places, Oxford, for instance. And what happens
I've
when this becomes, when it starts to become reciprocal in these places, it's really a very problematic place where we are right now.
Yeah. And it's really sad that the folks who have the visas are the ones who are trying to follow the rules,
yeah.
too. And then they are using them to check them off and rack up a big score for political points, not for necessarily for anything that's got to do with illegal activity.
Exactly.
Well, I know you want to move on to something else.
But go ahead.
But
it really, there's so much here because at the end of the day, when we look at any of these kinds of things happen, we have to ask, who is it that it can happen for?
Right.
And so once you start to erode these kinds of processes, you have to recognize if it's done to someone else, it can very easily be done to me. And that becomes a very unsettling part everywhere.
Well, and to that point, you know, the idea that Homeland Security is sort of scrubbing social media purportedly to root out anti-Semitism, I mean, Maggie Hendricks, does that, you know, raise concerns the government might broaden that surveillance just beyond student visa holders?
Absolutely, absolutely. And the thing is the effect it can have on the First Amendment rights that we think we have, that we all, you know, it's a free country I live in. Well, mm-hmm. it's a little scarier now when you think that somebody might be reading me being annoyed with somebody and say, well, maybe she doesn't need to be in the United States anymore.
All right. And, you know, we also saw the Trump administration moving to freeze nearly $800 million in funding for Northwestern. I mean, Ray Law, talking about the impact that can have on the school, you know, this is going towards things like, you know, medical research, for example.
It's just a sweeping push here, an initiative that really goes without rhyme or reason. It's just another way to say we're doing something big, and you don't even know the full fallout from what happens when they make an order like this. You don't know what you're missing until it's gone.
And, you know, Zareen Syed, from your reporting, do universities have much legal recourse, whether it's the question of student visas or these, you know, funding pullbacks?
Honestly, I don't think we know that yet, and I think they're also trying to figure it out themselves exactly what rights they have and what they can do to protect their students. And I think one of the most jarring things about the funding freeze, for example, is that the administrators at Northwestern were given no notice, and they found out through the media that they had nearly $100 million, you know, frozen, and they're in the middle of some groundbreaking, life-saving research, you know, Alzheimer's and creating pacemakers,
right.
And so I think there's just a lot at stake.
You asked about legal recourse, which takes us on a whole other thing as it relates to law firms.
Sure.
But here, it's been Northwestern, it's Columbia, it's mm-hmm. Harvard, it's, you know, all of these top institutions. And if they go at it one by one, it may be difficult. In so many of these things, there's got to be a unification yeah. of people mm-hmm. with similar issues, or all of us, to fight against some of the things that we're starting to see here.
Well,
that's the only way to stop bullies is to show strength.
Right, and so many institutions are caving, and law firms are caving.
Right.
Why are they giving $100 million of pro bono work just because Trump is mad at them or threatening not to give them more? Isn't that a loss on your books, too?
Yeah.
I don't understand why they cower to power.
And that's been beautiful from the associates who stood up
right.
and wrote the letter and fought against what's there.
Right.
And even the young lady here from Skadden,
right,
who
right,
put her
right.
name out there to really fight against this
right.
because somebody's got to stand up. So even if the universities decide to take a legal route, these law firms have got to stand in so that they can be counted on, because that's really the law is what we can rely on at this point.
Well, and it's, you know, not just higher ed. We've had the State Board of Education this week pushing back on
right.
orders to end diversity, equity, and inclusion programs in Illinois schools. Could this standoff end with, you know, local schools losing some of that federal funding potentially?
I mean, if the administration does follow through on their threats to do that, Illinois would lose about $6.4 billion in funding. which is a lot, again, a lot at stake. And I think the state superintendent, Tony Sanders, in his letter to the Trump administration this week, was very clear in asking for proof and more guidance on what exactly constitutes what they're calling illegal DEI programs and activities, because as far as we know, and Tony Sanders is saying that we're in compliance with federal civil rights laws.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot more to shake out with that in the coming weeks and months. Ray Long, I want to turn to a story you broke this week about Senate President Don Harmon facing an allegation from the State Board of Elections over campaign contributions. What's he potentially being accused of here?
Well, the whole issue, it goes back to when they put contribution limits, or a lot of people call them contribution caps, on individual donations from associations to PACs to individuals. And so they did that after the Blagojevich administration, pay-to-play scandals, etc. There was a need to try to get things out of the pay-to-play system and try to put things back in control on campaign finance. Well, they devised this thing that was pitched as a defensive mechanism, so that if you are facing a wealthy opponent who, because of federal law, can spend as much as possible, federal U.S. Supreme Court rulings. And so they're saying, well, if somebody comes in, starts swinging money around, I should be able to lift the caps. So it was a defense mechanism. However, people like Harmon and other legislative leaders have used that even when they don't have an opponent. And so they put their own money in to bust the caps. $100,000 can bust the caps, and that can open up what is called the money bomb. That's what's allows everybody to give as much as they want. And so there are still rules you have to follow with that. And he
believe did, it or not.
Yeah. Even though and there's not much enforcement, but there is a set of rules. And he was only allowed to have the cap off and through the March 24 primary. Well, he even got a letter from the State Board of Elections that said, you can't have it passed then, or you have to bust the caps again, which he could have easily done, but he didn't. And so he was continuing to collect money, big contributions, some over $1 million from different groups, some hundreds of thousands of dollars. And, you know, they were limited under the rule that was there to like 68,000, 13,000, sure, depending on who you were. And so the, you know, I could start poking around on this, and I thought, hey, I think the cap
doesn't
is
seem
on.
Quite,
right. And I called the Board of Elections, and they said, you know, there's $4 million here that he collected more than he should have. Now, our team of great reporters in Springfield caught up with him the next day and said, well, I disagree with the interpretation. He has until April 18th to make his arguments. We'll see what he says. But that is the landscape right now. And they're going to have to do a lot of legal leads to change things around.
Well, and I mean, so much of this is down to the pretty arcane, as you know, explained, campaign
finance.
No, I mean, it's the kind of thing that you have to sort of get into the weeds to, and these are obviously things that were set into place by lawmakers, that to their own benefit. I mean, Rufus Williams, forgive the naivete, do you think we might see any reforms to that campaign finance system anytime soon?
As Ray was talking, I was just thinking, remember when elections used to be about votes?
Yes, right.
And now it's about all these other things. Will there be any, there should be a lot of reforms in a lot of ways, particularly as we look at pick the matter here, but this one does seem a bit arcane. But it's a rule, and it's kind of interesting as well, because he was one who was poking at some others
for
having broken breaking our finance code. So.
And he championed this particular law that...
Seems like he would know it. Seems like he would know
he
it.
He claims he does.
One would think. One would hope, at least.
Yeah, when I... My mailbox was full of school board election flyers this past year that were all full-color cardstock, not cheap. Mm-hmm. That was when I was like, okay, can we please... put some limits on this money just because I don't want this stuff in my house.
Right, right to the recycling it goes. Well, speaking of elected officials, Ray Long, State Senator Emil Jones III's bribery trial finally got underway this week. Remind us what it is that he's accused of.
Well, he's accused of taking a $5,000 bribe. That's kind of the bottom line, and then lying to the FBI. And the idea was that he was going to try to help the red light camera industry along because they were whining and dining and asking him what they could do for him. He was being taped when he was getting asked by a mole who had gone rogue with the Safe Speed company. And now Emil Jones III, who is the son of longtime Senate President Emil Jones Jr., is now on trial. His dad's even in the courtroom today. And they're defending, and it's possible that it could wrap up next week. But this is one more in a long saga of state legislators that have been going to trial and getting indicted. And, you know, we've seen it on the city council. Now we see it in state government.
Yeah, $5,000.
Exactly my thought. Like, isn't that small claims court?
Well, and it's always lying to the feds that they get you for, even more than the crime itself, alleged.
Yeah, and it's such a legacy, as you mentioned, Emil Jones Jr., who was the Senate president, and he carries the same name, follows the same legacy.
Mentor to President Obama.
Yes, yes. And so to be at this point for $5,000 and a job for an intern, a no-show job for an intern, just seems like not much. For all that it's going to cost.
Well, I mean, to Ray's point about this long line of elected officials, Maggie, this is coming on, you know, more or less on the heels of the very long, very high-profile trial of former House Speaker Madigan. You know, is the average Illinoisan paying attention to these cases as they roll out, or is there a bit of fatigue?
I think there's a lot of fatigue. I mean, I have grown up. Ross Sinkowski was one of my first representatives, and then I wanted to vote for him, and then I couldn't. So, you know, like, we're sadly, I mean, how many former governors went to jail? We're sadly so used to it that it's exactly that we just, there is a lot of fatigue, and you don't, it just kind of becomes background noise.
Yeah. I have friends in Louisiana who call and say, Rufus, this used to be, we used to be the ones who sent everybody to jail. And now we are breaking records everywhere you look.
We're number one. Well, I want to turn to some city news as well. City Council Committee today rejected $1.25 million settlement with the family of Dexter Reed, shot dead by Chicago police during a traffic stop last year after he fired on officers. So this is now, you know, heading to trial. Rufus Williams, do you think the city might end up paying out even more than that proposed settlement, given the force with which we saw police officers respond to that?
They very well could. You know, there's so much in this particular situation. One part is, why did they stop him in the first place? And the answer being the seatbelt, which you can't see from the level they were in, and the tinted windows, just kind of causes questions all around that. Say there was a shot that came, these were unmarked cars that stopped... stop Dexter Reed. And then 96 shots in 41 seconds. Even three while he was out of the car and on the ground. I mean, there's so much here that causes concern. And the thought that they may have been able to settle for $1.25 million, I have a good feeling that there could be a lot more that we have to pay as a result of all of this.
Right. Well, and you know, another story with the Chicago police this week, there's been some major pushback from Englewood's older people to a pilot program that would allow officers to file gun charges without a Cook County prosecutor sign-off. You know, Ray Long, what sorts of concerns does that raise?
Well, it raises questions of due process here. And, you know, in contrast to like the visa thing where they just decide to do it and people are being shipped out, this is just one step down the road closer to that. And so you want to try to protect rights as much as possible. The argument here is this... This eliminates one step in the process, one key step.
five aldermen in Inglewood, none of them were consulted. None of them feel like the constituents had any voice in what this was. Even if it turns out to be the right thing, the people should be able to participate in determining whether or not this is how they want to go. And to your point about due process, I suspect that they won't, because due process is important. It's an important part of our whole judicial system.
And it's difficult to get older people on board for a plan if they don't know. I mean, we've got 50 mini mayors, and they're protective of their constituents. And
like Rufus is saying, they dropped this plan on this neighborhood, and nobody has a chance to even make a suggestion. It's another kind of issue with the Johnson administration, too, where we've kind of seen that over and over.
Yeah, I remember someone telling me, Rufus, it's not what you do, it's how you do it. Mm-hmm. And it may ultimately be the right answer, but the way in which it comes down isn't the right way to get things done.
Well, I want to turn to another Northwestern-related story. Maggie Hendricks, the university reportedly settling lawsuits related to hazing in its football program. Remind us first some of the allegations there.
Just absolutely terrible allegations against Pat Fitzgerald's, him and his staff of pushing kids to absolutely ridiculous limits and some sexual things. It was really, really bad. And I really commend these athletes who stood forward and said, hey, this is not okay, because they are making things better for the generations after them.
And, you know, Fitzgerald's got his own suit against Northwestern. It's supposed to go to trial in November. I mean, this really shocked a lot of people, given how well-liked he was.
That was kind of the very surprising thing about it, is he was just kind of this fixture in Evanston of everybody liked Pat. Mr. Go Cats. But if he's running this program like that, there's not a whole lot to like.
Yeah, this is one of these things. When hazing is happening, and it's happening to these students, as much as I may love you, somebody's got to protect the students.
Right.
And the way in which this happened, the sense was that it's impossible for him not to have known.
Right.
And therein lies the rub.
And when you look at the university more broadly, Zarina, I mean, what kind of reputational damage could this cause to the university, and will that be lasting?
Honestly, I think yes. I don't know. I don't see how it couldn't have a lasting impact. And just as a general point, I'm just so empathetic to college students right now, and professors and people that are trying to keep colleges a safe place where your children are protected, where expressive action is protected. I think it's just a really rough time out there for them. They're just trying to do what's best and try to do the right thing.
All right, well, let's turn to a happier sports story for Bulls fans. Maggie, Bulls heading to the play-in tournament. How do you expect them to do there, and maybe in the playoffs proper?
I mean, if they get to the playoffs, they're not going to win anything. I'm not going to put lipstick on a pig.
You know? A ray of sunshine.
It has been 10 years since the Bulls even won a playoff series. A playoff series, just one.
Just one.
And this team, they are playing well now, so they might get out of the play-in tournament. That's great. But, like, they're celebrating over getting into a play-in tournament. Oh, come on. What are we doing here? This is a team that should be going for championships. It's the third largest market. They have a huge, rabid fan base. It is disgusting that Bulls fans continue to have to put up with this.
And that's that.
I will say I saw a game in person, and the place was rocking.
It's so fun.
And right. That's how they
that's
get you.
You.
That's how they get you.
Yeah. But the team was
so
good.
Fun.
Yeah.
But a lot of times you're having so much fun because you're watching the Bucks. So, just take the train up to Milwaukee.
Right, you're waiting for Giannis to come to town, otherwise you don't really care.
Yeah.
The expectations for this team have been so diminished that they're winning, which is what's making it fun and exciting. But long live the 90s.
Well, right. Yes,
you know.
But that's the thing, that we shouldn't still be waiting for a good team. We shouldn't still be waiting for a general manager and ownership who cares.
All right, well, let's get to the basketball that makes you happy. NCAA Women's Championship wrapped up this past weekend. Who are you keeping your eye on for the WNBA draft?
For the Chicago Sky, I think they're going to go with a guard. So we're looking at somebody like Haley Van Lith from TCU. I really hope it's Tahina Pow Pow from South Carolina, just for headlines alone. Tahina Pow Pow?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, every copyright
in the
city
name.
Exactly wants that name to come to Chicago.
Well, and I mean, we didn't quite have the fireworks of like a Caitlin Clark, you know, or something this year, but it seems like, you know, a pretty exciting tournament to watch.
Oh my gosh, it was an amazing tournament. And Paige Beckers doesn't have that same kind of rabid following that Caitlin Clark did, but she's a better player.
Okay. Mm. Well, we have 4-star players on the panel here, but that is all the time that we have for this week. So our thanks to Ray Long, Rufus Williams, Zareen Syed, and Maggie Hendricks. We're back to wrap things up right after this.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family. The Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that's our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website, WTTW.com/news. Now for The Week in Review, I'm Nick Blumberg. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay informed. Have a great weekend. All right, City Council trying to crack down on these rogue towing companies that apparently show up to a crash scene and tow your car away and then, like, hold people's cars hostage.
Steve Goodman wrote a song about it in
the
80s.
Lincoln Park Pirates. Yeah. I mean, right. Had you heard about these companies?
Oh,
these,
yeah.
I mean,
heard about it, saying you don't have accidents, but so often, so you don't know what to do.
Sure.
And they must have these CB radios that tells them
where
it is.
Exactly.
And they show up, and then there you are with your car gone. And
that
you
is
have,
so scary.
Oh, it is.
Because, I mean, you know, there's the aggressive companies that'll tow you off a lot or that'll boot you. But, I mean, showing up, you know, when somebody's all frazzled after a crash like that.
I live right down the street from them. And every time I walk by when I'm going to get breakfast or something, I get very mad at them.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a personal injury law firm serving Chicago for 37 years.